This video doesn't amount to much. It's mostly just a peg, shall we say, or a foot stamp to hold. The link in the description that is the post on Quora that I've posted recently, it's about a different way of looking at free energy, how not to have free energy, which is the way our conventional wisdom is set up to be. Namely, how do you suppress a surge? Every electrical engineer is given an attitude that surges are wrong, they're bad, they're parasitic, they destroy equipment, so let's get rid of them, let's prevent them, and suppress them whenever we can. And so there are all these techniques for doing so. Well, if you do the opposite of the technique, then you get free energy. And you don't have to be an engineer to know how to use free energy, because the simplest way that does not require rocket science intelligence to do so is to simply pass reactive power through a simple resistance acting as a heating element, not an inductive resistor, but a simple resistor. not an inductive heating element, but a simple resistor heating element in which no inductivity is involved, just simple resistance. To boil water, turn a steam turbine, rotate an electrical generator, and there you've got electrical power without having to use nuclear power to do so, because that's all nuclear power plants do. They boil water. That's all they do. Yet, they also produce plutonium, which the warmongers love to have huge arsenals of nuclear warheads to make us look strong and invincible. So you can not only run a steam locomotive, but you can also run replace a nuclear power plant. No coal, putting out pollution in the air, acid rain, just reactive power. It's the simplest idea in the world. Or if you don't want to produce heat, you can produce light, because incandescent bulbs, the old kind, nobody has them anymore, supposedly, those are resistive loads. So you can have all the light and heat you want to, without having to be a rocket scientist to figure out how to make use of that reactive power. And reactive circuits are so simple, but they're predicated on a very important basis. If you want to do it right, you have to not have any voltage source in there, unless you're using the voltage source as a methodology to suppress the free energy. Now, I know that sounds backwards, but there are ways of doing so. That's what this post is all about, how to suppress a surge. Because one of my problems, that's always a problem, a challenge, is how to turn off a free energy circuit. It's all very well and good. I'm very good at simulating free energy circuits, but turning them off is a whole nother problem. And they tend to explode in your face. So I came up with a method, and I suspected it might be the way the Amon brothers did their device of 100 years ago. Who knows? I suspected they were using their radio inside their car. But what I found out from working the problem yesterday, simulating it, is you don't even need a crystal radio set. A Galena diode and a coil-based tuner. You don't even need that. All you need is a whip antenna, 1-yard-long piece of wire. A whip antenna. The antenna that, used to exist on older model cars, that's about a little over a yard long. It's telescoping, when you pull it out of your hood or you push it down. Or if you had a fancy car, you had a little motor, electric motor, push it up and pull it back down, retract it. But it was just a metallic stick. In the shape of a kind of a wire or narrow tubing that was several feet long, not too many, just a few feet, to catch some airwaves, radio waves, AM radio waves. Well, that's all you need to pick up about a microvolt of power, and you can use that. But see, now if you use it as a continual source, so I used a battery of 1 microvolt, in my simulation to simulate an input from an aerial, an antenna. And it actually suppressed the development of a surge of free energy because it was a continuous voltage source, and I had it in the right place to suppress the development of the surge, which was happening right in that section of the circuit. And then when I disconnect it, it goes back to developing a surge. It dissipates whatever energy is in the system, so it damps out just like a normal thermodynamic entropy-oriented circuit. And then this other surge develops on the heels of the dissipation of the pre-energy that was stored in the circuit. So a surge is a different animal. It's not just energy. It's a complex form of energy in that you've got a waveform that's slightly complicated, which has certain behavioral characteristics, certain frequencies. And if you come in with a voltage source that, like a DC voltage source, like a battery or a anything that's a continuous voltage source coming from outside the circuit, what we take to be normal in running a circuit, actually suppresses a surge. And this is why we have this mentality, oh, I've got to supply my load with the full amount of voltage that it requires. Where else is it going to get it from, you know? It's not going to get it from the air, but it can get a little bit, provided it's an initiation, an initial pre-charge condition on the capacitor, so that what you give the capacitor, 1 microvolt of a charge, once it's gone, it's gone. So it has a chance to dissipate, step aside. It's never very strong to begin with, but it's still, if it was maintained, it can be strong if it's in the wrong place, as I'm saying already. But if it quickly dissipates, it steps aside, and so it won't get in the way of the development of a surge. And I put it in the very place where I try to suppress it. So I have a pre-charge condition on two capacitors, but I also have two batteries that are switched into or out of the circuit at that location. And the batteries have also 1 microvolt on them, just like the pre-charged capacitor had. But unlike the battery, the capacitor can oscillate with inductors nearby and create a surge because of the way the circuit is designed. And that surge escalates to infinite oblivion if it's not cut off at an appropriate point in time and then pulsed so that you get an average of power over time overall if you average out the pulses, and you safeguard the circuit from destroying itself. Now, electrical engineers will admit to what they call a resonant rise condition, which destroys equipment. So they already know free energy exists, but they won't give it the credit that it is due because we are not allowed to have it. It's not in corporate best interests, namely the banking establishment and the military. The banks would go out of business, and they are very monopolistic, very much so, and the military would not be able to defend us from foreign invaders or domestic terrorists if they lost their grip, their edge. If they lost their edge, they want free energy all to themselves, and the banks have their own version of free energy, which is print their own money, you know? Most currency is digital anyway, so you don't have to print it. They just issue it into circulation digitally, electronically. 98% of that is non-paper, non-coinage money of our economy, 98% of our economy. So it's not hard for them to manufacture money. But that's their version of free energy. So they don't want you and I or some other garage mechanic or technician to come up with their own currency and issue it into circulation in the form of free energy because it would blow the economy. The rates of everything would go sky high, the people remaining who are paying for energy and whatnot because of all of the other people generating their own energy. And so much of today's world is based on energy. It was nothing like it was back in the 1840s or 1850s when we had the initial days of the telegraph. That was the only use of electricity at the time. Anything else might have been a toy, a novelty, you know, but not a technological dependency, a sociological dependency. That was it. Now there's so much electrical energy, my God, it's like, yeah, if the lights went out, we'd starve and we'd freeze to death. There would be starvation in the streets. People would be running around wild, you know. It's like, oh my God, you know. Anyway. So I'm not exactly a peace. I mean, I like peace too, but sometimes you gotta wake up, and it can, from slumber, it can be a little disturbing to be awakened when you don't want to be. I've had the opportunity to grow with this knowledge over the past 4+ years. So any ahas that freaked me out, I got over it. But I've seen this happen on a number of occasions wherein an administrator or a moderator of a forum or a message board system or a space, they'll shut down my messages or lock me out, lock down my account, erase what I've posted so many times that it's, kind of ridiculous. I do get to post on Quora. And I can post on Energetic Forum, but I'm basically ignored because nobody there wants to talk or hear about simulations. They want to build something, Okay, they're a little more advanced than me in their desires. I'm a little more cautious. So, well, I want to understand it first. I don't want to just build it. Because I've heard stories of people who have shrapnel all over their lab, their arm almost gets taken off. They quickly duck for cover or exit the lab space before they get injured because their circuit simulation or their motors, excuse me, their circuit or their motor or their generator blew up and it obliterated itself. One guy, I read this over a decade ago, he had a circuit, he timed it on his watch. All it was good for was frying itself, and smoke would come up, and the insulation on the coils would melt and short out, and that would be the end of his circuit. And it was something like 90 seconds, I don't know, 45 seconds. It was slightly over a minute or a couple minutes. It wasn't very long. But the thing, all it did was destroy itself. That's all it was good for. And then he had to go build a new one. And obviously, nobody would want to do that. You want to reuse your circuit. Now, let me give you an example. We create surges all the time by igniting gasoline inside of our internal combustion engines. The problem, though, is that it's a setup. The very medium, the gasoline, that explodes upon ignition is consumed in the process, in a non-reversible process. Unlike an electrical surge, which is reversible in the sense that you can turn it into something useful. And reuse some of that energy to build on it more energy. And that's why it accumulates at an exponential rate, because it's building on top of itself. So it's not a question of more energy exiting the circuit than what enters it, because we're overlooking something far more significant, that more energy is accumulating than what exits the circuit. And that's why it destroys itself. So we're ignoring this middle step of accumulation as if it does not exist. And so then we posit the problem to the collective mentality that, oh, that doesn't work. That's not even logical to have more energy exiting the circuit than what enters it. That would be like more water flowing out of a tea kettle than what you put in it. I mean, that doesn't make sense, does it? But we skip the middle step and we ignore it. The middle step is the accumulation of energy, which is not energy, it's reactants. So we convert energy into reactants. We accumulate it because it cannot dissipate, because it cannot see an inductive load, excuse me, a reactive load. All it can see is a simple resistance. And then we manipulate it by expanding it. We could contract it if we want to, make it seemingly shrink into an obliviousness of nothingness. Although it's there, we just can't see it, it's so tiny. And then we convert it back into energy, if we're an electrical engineer and know how to do so. But since I'm not an electrical engineer, I just know the simple way is to pass it through a resistor, and now we got heat or light or both. So it's this middle step we're all forgetting about. But be that as it may, the post on Quora, I took a different approach, and I thought, okay, because I'm trying to figure out how to regulate the thing by turning it off. Now, I had another version of this circuit that was easy to turn off. I just short out two specific points in the circuit. Well, it was two sets, two pa it was a pair of points with a simple resistor, and it shorted out and it killed the surge. Killed any pre-existing surge, and it prevented any future surge from arising. But now in this new version, and it's done in LTSpice, because that one was done in MicroCap, that doesn't work. So I was kind of wondering, well, how do you turn this thing off, you know? It's great to have free energy, but you want to be able to turn it off, you know? You don't want it continually running, about to blow itself up in a fraction of a second. And that's the other problem. I got its efficiency up to the point that it's no longer taking like 20,000 seconds to reach an appreciable amount of energy, or reactance, if you prefer to call it, to be more accurate. Now it's milliseconds. I had it down to nanoseconds, but now I've lowered its efficiency, so now it's up to milliseconds. But still, that's how can anybody, you know? Well, in any case, I do have I figured out how to turn it off, and it's simply to input anything, any kind of continuous voltage from an exterior source that's either very low frequency or else DC, which is kind of equivalent. You know, DC is kind of equivalent to an extremely low frequency. And we're talking a frequency that's on the order of 1e to the negative 7. You know, that's like 100 nanocycles per second, which means you basically would have to spend 10,000 seconds to see one oscillation, one cycle of an oscillation. You'd have to wait 10,000 seconds. No, excuse me, 10 million. Yeah, 100 nano is 10 million. You'd have to wait, 10 million seconds to see one full wave occur, a rise and a fall of one oscillation, one cycle of an oscillation. That's a pretty slow wave, a pretty long wavelength. And it's so long and stretched out, it's practically DC in its behavioral characteristic. And so I found that I could use either one to suppress a surge. Now, if I used a fast oscillation, go the opposite way, at 1e to the positive 7, which is 10 million cycles per second, I was actually boosting. I was boosting the surge. Anyway, I had to find a way that worked, so I found I just use a low frequency, or, hey, forget the frequency and just use DC. But it has to be 1 microvolt, you know. Because anything more you'd be wasting your power. You know, why use anything more when you don't need to? So a microvolt. And that's what Mother Nature provides in our environment. The trees give and receive that much power. They're designed, they're in the shape of an aerial, the old style aerial, the TV antennas we used to have 50 years ago on the rooftops of our homes. And the same amount of power that a crystal radio set will get from an AM radio broadcast. So that's all the energy you need to run anything. A battleship, a solar system, whatever amount of energy you want. I mean, anyway. So, you know, I laugh at how ridiculous conventional wisdom is, but, you know, I forget the road I took to get to this point. So I really am not exercising much compassion in your direction. But I can't help it. I am now the way I am now. I've cultivated this sensibility that was never there before. I had the same sensibility everybody else had, except in my heart I had a different thought. But it was not a trained thought. It was just a belief or a wishful thought, you know, a fantasy, a desire. Now I have experience. Even though it's virtual reality, it's still experience. And it's predicated on the robotic machines, the simulator software. I'm sorry. I'm old and cranky. You know, I'm not healthy and young anymore. Simulators are used by engineers to get a kind of a rough estimate of what to expect when they go to work on the circuit on the bench when they build it. And so you can't take it as a verbatim, you know, guidance. You have to understand that there's a lot of wiggle room for interpretation. But if you're familiar with the world of the simulator and the world of the real world, you can translate from one to the other and from the other back into the one. And that ability to translate is important. Just to give you an example, I used to think Paul Falstead's simulator was a bunch of crap because it was so easy, and it still is, to create over-unity. I hate to use the word, the C word, but that's what I was, not at first. I thought it was fantastic because it made it so easy to learn. But then I realized it's too easy. Well, it turns out there's nothing wrong with its reality if you know how to translate it. And the translation is this. You get the free energy if you use his transformer in your circuit. It's so easy. Without the transformer, I don't think it's possible. It might be, but I don't think so from what I can recall. Now, there's something about his transformer that's very peculiar. It's different than our current day transformers. It's as if, A, the core material is not the same, and B, there's tons of it. Now, how you squish a ton or several thousand tons of iron into the core of an inductor is anybody's guess. Obviously, you magnetically couple it to a larger mass outside the core. Be that as it may, it's also a different material. Today's material is designed to suppress eddy currents, and so they take powdered iron, they compress it in an epoxy base to insulate all the particles from each other so that there's no eddy current production. Well, that's not what I want in an overunity circuit. I want eddy currents in the core material, and I want tons of core material there in the core of the inductor, somehow magnetically coupled to it so that we can somehow get away with having tons of core material. So it has to be solid steel, you know, magnetizable iron. Yeah, but solid iron, magnetizable iron, not this other kind that's friable. You know, you get the transformer from Amazon and you just hit it with a hammer, the core, and the thing turns to dust. What? I thought it was made of steel. No, because it's supposed to suppress eddy currents. Well, that's not going to help if you're trying to create free energy. It's probably going to get in your way and create problems, and then you're going to wonder why. Oh, gee, it's not a surprise. Free energy is a sham. No, it's not. We've engineered our world over the course of the last century to be oblivious to free energy and to be favorable to buying new batteries when your battery gets spent, or recharging batteries because it gets spent, and circuits that have to require the full amount of voltage to suppress surges, and to to pay through the nose for all of our energy costs, and then you got to work and fight and for the diminishing dollars, you know, because of inflation, the diminishing availability of dollars in circulation. And so it's like, okay, what kind of rat race? And the shrinking middle class, you know, my mom didn't have to work when I was born. I don't know about moms today. They all seem to have to work. So it's a different world today and different economic factors, but also we're not savvy like we were a century ago. We do things differently. I've just given you a few examples, just a few. I think the Amon brothers did what Nathan Stubblefield managed to do. I think that's where they got their inspiration from. They may have gotten it from Tesla as well, because they're all living in the same era. But at least we have evidence as to what Nathan Stubblefield did. And we have a little bit of what the Amon brothers did. And they're very similar in how they do things. So I think that's where to look for some kind of role model, you know, or credibility, or, you know, causation. Where did the Amon brothers get their ideas from to come up with whatever it was they did, or however it was they managed to do it? Because it is a mystery still to this day. We don't know how they did it. We just know little bits and pieces of their story, but not the whole story. So I've made it my task to try to understand it, and I started some time ago. But actually with Tesla's special generator, because that's a similar device that uses lots of iron magnetically coupled to the core of its transformer. But it's not the same device, and so, okay, well, how did the Amon brothers do it? What was their approach? And I've discovered that parallel capacitance adjacent to or inside of coils that are undergoing mutual inductivity, that's the magic. But they all have to have parallel capacitance, not just some of them. Every single one of them that has mutual inductivity, in other words, two or more coils that are sharing their magnetic flux and transferring power magnetically between each other, all of them have to exhibit parallel capacitance of the right amount and the right equivalent series resistance either inside themselves or adjacent to them in parallel to themselves or in parallel within themselves, and you get an unbelievable phenomenon in which it doesn't matter anymore what their coupling coefficient is between those coils. It could be anything ridiculously low, meaning the coils could be separated by a distance. And the Amon brother, Cyril Amon, claimed you needed to be within 10 miles of his power supply, but you didn't have to be electrically connected to it. All you had to do was receive it. You know, you had to have a coil adjacent to some iron, solid iron, and the coil came alive. And you could connect it to a circuit, and you'd have power for your circuit. And it was like, whoa, 10 miles? Whoa! So this is the kind of way they did things. Very different than today's world. You can't do that in a simulator necessarily until I learned how. Nobody will tell you this. I had to stumble across it. If you artificially put parallel capacitance in your coils that you're magnetically coupling to each other, and you give a sufficient amount, and it might have to be ridiculous, you know, and when you first start out, things are ridiculous scales, waiting a long time, ridiculously high capacitances, you know, all kinds of things that are ridiculous. But if you get results, you can always tweak it to make it more efficient and learn over time how to make it more realistic. So don't worry about it being unrealistic at first. If you get results, just run with it. Keep going at it, and you'll get somewhere. It just takes time. Anyway.